Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream my show live weekdays at 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Good morning, everyone. I'm Angela Davis, and you're listening to NPR News. The National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat warning for the Twin Cities metro area through 8 o'clock tonight. The heat index will make it feel like it's 100 degrees today. Minnesota is in the middle of its longest early season heat wave on record, and those temperatures in the mid-90s and the high humidity are not only uncomfortable for some of us, but also potentially dangerous and just kind of weird. Later in the hour, a climatologist from the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources will join us, and I will ask him what he's seeing in the changes to Minnesota's weather. And I want to hear from you, too. How are you coping with the heat wave, and what changes have you noticed over the last few years in Minnesota's climate? The phone lines are open. Call us at 651-227-6000. Again, 651-227-6000, or you can tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. First, though, I want to take some time to talk to Mike Jackson about the Black Tech Talent Summit, which begins tomorrow and lasts through Sunday. It's a collection of events, some virtual, some in person. Hi, Mike, and welcome to NPR.
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning. So let's start with the summit. You're trying to create a pipeline to diversity in the tech field. So tell me, why is this so important to you?
Yeah, so, you know, in the last couple of years, I participated in a conference called BitCon, which stands for Blacks in Technology Conference. And I was asked to help co-produce this event. And, you know, one of the topics that came up a lot was the need for a pipeline. And so I looked around and I said, well, the corporations are here. They have the jobs. The Black orgs are here. They have some of the resources, and the community's in the audience. So I said, you know, what's the disconnect? And when I really sat and pondered on it, I realized that, you know, a lot of the orgs were nonprofit and therefore hard to scale, not investable. We all know that Black businesses, for-profit and nonprofit, are extremely underfunded. And so it made it difficult for them to kind of come together and be a pipeline when they're worried about funding and things of that nature. And so when the pandemic hit, my other business, which is an event production business, which is how I got involved with BitCon, obviously there was no more events. So it gave me time to kind of dive in more to this problem that I had touched on with diversity and inclusion in the tech realm. And with the pandemic, you know, having people losing their jobs and losing opportunities, I knew that the Black community was going to be hit the hardest. And I knew that tech was a field that was going to continue to grow because everybody was going to start working remotely and new innovations was going to come from this. And so I wanted to tackle the problem before it became a super big issue. Upon our research, we found that there was 900,000 unfilled positions in IT, and Black people are only accounting for about 4 to 7% of that.
And that's nationally?
Yes.
Wow. And so you're like, I'm the man for this. I see both sides of this. Right. And
yes.
So tell us what's on the agenda. Again, the name of the event is Black Tech Talent Summit. It starts tomorrow, runs through Sunday. What's happening and how is it happening? But it's both in person and virtual, right?
Yes. So it's a hybrid event. All the virtual portions of it are tomorrow, Friday the 11th. And so we're going to open up with a keynote, of course, and we're going to talk about, you know, the different issues and how we're going to bring together the pipeline. And so we have a conversation on Black employee retention, which is a major problem nationwide, but especially here in the Twin Cities. We're going to talk about diversity and inclusion. We also have a Black FinTech panel. And for the listeners, FinTech is financial technology. And that's an area that we're definitely not really seeing, and especially from an entrepreneurial standpoint of owning the company. And so we have a few speakers that are going to talk about their journey in that field and how they created their company. We also are going to talk about routes to a tech career. So for those who are interested in the community on how to get into it, we have a few speakers discussing different opportunities and routes, whether that's a boot camp, whether that's college, whether that's learning online on your own time, just discussing those things. And, you know, for reference for the listeners, the national average salary for an IT position is $135,000. A lot of people are coming out of school starting at $80,000.
Wow.
Fresh out of school. So it's a huge opportunity for the Black community.
And for you as a Black man, are you looking at Black youth or just Black folks in general and saying, hey, if you're trying to make a career choice, look over here. And this is how we can create a pathway for you to get into this industry.
Yeah. So we're all the way around Black women, children, men, and we're using Black as the broad statement that it is. So not just African American, but all of us that are trying to come up in this field. And we have an actual panel. It's called the Youth Pipeline, and so that's from middle school. And we have a couple organizations that focus on educating youth on how to code, and they'll be speaking up opportunities with them during the summit as well. So we have a 20-year plan, right? This is an overnight thing. And so my goal is for a kid who does a robotics class at 10, we feature him on our platform, which gets a lot of notoriety and views. And then at 15, he or she does something else great. And by 18, companies like Google and Microsoft are scouting them the same way they scout us for sports and entertainment. So we have a lofty goal.
So Saturday, there's an in-person opportunity in Minneapolis and in Uptown at the Moxie Hotel. Tell us about what's happening there.
Yes. Yeah, so as everybody knows, we've been locked in the house for pretty much a year. And you know, we've built a community of over 3,000 members organically over the last 10, 11 months. And so this is an opportunity for us to meet in person and fellowship. We also will have a few corporations there that are networking that have job opportunities. It's also a time to party and just listen to some good music and eat some food and just get to have that personal connection again. And that'll be from 5 to 10 p.m. on Saturday.
And the location again,
It's Moxie Hotel Uptown.
Moxie Hotel in Uptown. And then what's happening on Sunday?
So Sunday's super fun. It's all ages, and that is our demo day. Mm-hmm. And so we will have, once again, Black entrepreneurs who have different apps and products, and they'll be showcasing what they've built and what they've been working on. We have another company who they provide educational robots and kits where you can build your own robots. So they'll be there demoing those opportunities. We'll also have a pitch competition similar to Shark Tank for anybody who watches that. And then we're giving out awards for people who've been on our podcast and for companies we've worked with that have really taken a real initiative on this diversity inclusion goal. We'll have some on-site recruiting. So companies will be doing speed interviews on site. And then we also have a DJ who will be there. And so another fun opportunity to be in person and two opportunities. And for the pitch competition, I'm giving away $1,000. So.
And so, Mike, you and I have not met, and I don't think you know this, but my son is a computer science major in college. And, you know, as he has been researching this field and learning what it's like to work in the tech industry, some of the stories that he's has heard from you know, folks who are mentors is that the environment is not necessarily welcoming, and it can be very isolating for people of color. And is that what you're hearing as well?
Oh yeah, that's a big issue, and that's part of that, you know, Black employee retention portion. And we talk to a lot of our corporations that we work with. Right now we're at over 30, and we have that conversation with them. It gets lonely when you are Black and you're in tech and you're in corporate and you're making an income that the rest of your family may not make or may have never seen. And so now you have multiples of kind of alienation. And so if you're working at a company that, whether on purpose or unintentionally, isn't very inclusive, they may be diverse in their hiring, but that doesn't mean they're inclusive to the ideas, to the culture, to the work environment. It can be a problem. And so part of the way we tackle that is through our, you know, culturally specific content, which starts with our podcast. And we talk about natural hair in the workplace, colorism, African versus African American, just all the real things that, you know, we want to get off our chest and have a voice and have a say. So also that's why we do these events. It's an opportunity for us to connect with each other, but it's also an opportunity for the allies and the corporations to come in and be a guest instead of being the dominant all the time. Now they can come and see what we do, how we feel, how we learn, and how our culture is. And hopefully they'll take some of that back to their jobs and start implementing some of these things that we're teaching them.
Mike, I want to back up because your personal story, how you got to this moment of leadership, this entrepreneurial spirit that you have, it's not a typical or a predictable one. You grew up all over the Twin Cities, and I understand you were living with your mom, your stepdad, and your two brothers until you were about 15, and then you went to live with your biological dad. So tell us a little bit about how that went.
Yeah, so, you know, I was used to kind of that family structure of, as you mentioned, my mom and stepdad and my two brothers. And, you know, things got a little crazy around that age of 15, 16, where, you know, I'm wondering where I come from. You know, I have a different last name than everybody else in the household. You know, a lot of mental health in the Black community goes undiagnosed. And so my stepdad had, you know, MS. He was also bipolar and probably had a few other things that weren't diagnosed. And so sometimes he would be really cool and fun. And sometimes, you know, you'd feel like he hated you. And so, you know, for me as a young man, that was extremely tough for me to kind of try to navigate on my own. And so my biological father called and he asked my mom if I could come stay with him. And she asked me, and, you know, in reality, I felt a way about her even asking me that. And so because of that, I said, well, I guess if that's something you're willing to present, I suppose I should entertain it. And so I went to live with him, and that wasn't the best experience either, because he had no experience in being a father. So verbally abusive, mentally abusive, sometimes physically abusive. And it became a situation where it was like having a roommate that could tell you what to do, because he often wasn't there in the house. He didn't provide food. And as I mentioned, I'm used to that family structure. So it wasn't the greatest experience.
I bring it up because then at 16, you began working full time in a clothing store. And that's when you got the idea to start your own clothing line called Sneakerheads. So tell us how you made that happen.
Yeah, so I was actually a couple years older. I was 17 when I came up with the idea and 18 when I launched it. And so, you know, at the time I was into shoes, and back then, this is 2007. So, only sneakerheads knew the term sneakerhead. Now it's mainstream and everybody kind of knows it, and it's in the music and in the films and stuff now. But a sneakerhead is just somebody who has a passion for sneaker culture and loves to collect shoes. And now it's primarily people focused on Jordans and things of that nature. But at the time it was just sneakers, period. And so I was really into that. And the shoes at the time were getting really colorful and really creative, but the clothing wasn't. And so it was hard to be original, because you could get a pair of Air Forces, for instance, could come out and your only choice was the shirt that came with it from Nike, right? Mm-hmm. Or a pair of Jordans, and you get the Jordan shirt. Well, then everybody looks the same. and so I decided to design some T-shirts, and I called the company Sneakerheads Clothing. And our slogan was the perfect match, because that's exactly what we were doing. I saved up $1,500 to do my first run of T-shirts, and that's kind of how I got started.
And so how do you then go from clothing to tech?
Yeah, so it's a long journey. But I had the clothing line, and so that brought me to, you know, developing our online website. That brought me to learning how to network. At the time, MySpace was the big platform, and then, of course, Facebook and Twitter. And from that point on, I started connecting with celebrities and getting them to wear or retweet my products. And then I started getting close to promoters locally in the Twin Cities that were bringing celebrities, and I'd get backstage and have them, you know, rocking the clothing. And then from that point on, I picked up a camera and started shooting my stuff in the club. And so that kind of, I tell that background because that's how the marketing came into play. With the website, that's how the technology came into play, looking at the analytics and the data and tracking where our sales were happening. So that was kind of the soft introduction to it. But from there, from the clothing line, I, you know, got more into the photography and marketing portion of it. And then I started bringing celebrities myself because it gave me more access to build the relationships, make some money from the concert, and get them to wear my stuff while they perform. And I, in 2015, I end up bringing the R&B singer Mario. And so I'm like, well, I've been doing these R&B shows. There's got to be a better way to market. And there really wasn't. So I created a platform called the Premium Experience, which is an event marketing platform that helps promoters and venues better understand their audience through data. So it gave me the power to do push notification advertising to my audience. It gave me the power to sell, you know, pre-sell tickets and all these different things. It took about 3 years to develop. And through that 3 years, that's what brought me into tech. Working with developers and kind of developing what I saw and learning different technologies that we could implement and seeing what the competition was. Mm-hmm. And that also brought me to, as I mentioned in the beginning, connecting with BitCon because I was doing the events and the event marketing. And that really brought my world into, first off, producing a tech conference, but second off, getting into that diversity and inclusion, specifically in tech space.
You've had quite the journey, and I want to make sure that we, you know, that you share with our audience about the influence your grandparents have had on you, and especially in taking you on road trips to where you were able to meet other family members and see how they live. And so can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, shout out to my grandparents, Joe and Janice Rigger. I love them. They're one of my biggest influences in my life as far as being a good person and being family oriented and, you know, understanding that the world was bigger than Minnesota. I was blessed to be able to travel at a young age and see different things. And I remember some years ago, somebody asked me, you know, I was telling them my story and they're like, you've been through so much. Like, how did you, like, what made you so different from some of these other people who went through the same thing but took a different route? And I had to really think about that. And one thing that I realized is like, not everybody had the chance to travel. And I think that's so important because when you think your neighborhood, your city, your state is the world, it's very limiting in what you think you can achieve. It's very limiting in who you feel like you have to surround yourself by. And so by me traveling, I had places I wanted to get back to. You know, I grew up very poor with my parents, and so we didn't necessarily travel as an immediate family, but in the summer I would be able to travel with my grandparents. And so, you know, one experience I'll share is we went on a 2 month road trip, and two of the stops, one was New York City and the other was Massachusetts. And when we got to Massachusetts, my aunt and uncle, from the time I got out the car, they took me everywhere. We literally got out the car and I think we went to like this park and did paddle boating. And then we went to dinner. And then that night, their son, my cousin, had like a performance. And then the next day we went to the beach. And as we left, I locked their door. And when we came back, everybody was like, oh, and mind you, we went to the beach. So we were like gone for the day.
For hours.
Man. And when we came back, they were like, who locked the door? And I was like, I did. And they all chuckled like a family sitcom, right? And I'm like, why are you guys laughing? And they're like, oh, we don't lock our doors here. And that was like a small thing, but for me it was big because it was like to have that level of peace of mind to know that everybody in your neighborhood is so well off that the thought of having to lock your door even when you leave for the day is like laughable, right? Mm-hmm. That was something to aspire to, right?
Right.
There's neighborhoods that we grew up in where your door was locked and you're like, and I also need a second lock and I need an alarm and, you know, all these different types of things. And so that was something major, a major moment for me.
Well, Mike Jackson, thank you for sharing your story with us today. And, you know, this past year, you've been honored with several awards, the Community Impact Award presented by Twin Cities Business Magazine. And you were also, you know, your company won the Inclusive Evolution Award presented by Minnesota Startup Awards. And I'm just happy that we got a chance to get to know you this morning on NPR. We've been talking to Mike Jackson, the organizer and the founder of Black Tech Talent. And that organization is hosting a summit tomorrow through Sunday. And you can find out more at blacktechtalent.org/blacktechtalentsummit. And we'll have more on our website as well. Thank you, Mike, and good luck this weekend.
Thank you. I appreciate your time and your platform.
The National Weather Service has issued an excessive heat warning for the Twin Cities metro area through 8 o'clock tonight. That heat index will make it feel more like it's 100 degrees today. In fact, most of central, southern, and western Minnesota are feeling the heat. Minnesota is in the middle of its longest early season heat wave on record. Temperatures in the 90s and high humidity have made it uncomfortable, potentially dangerous to be outside for work or play. And next week is looking almost as hot. Again, the longest it's been this hot so early. So as we sweat through this together, I know many people are wondering, what is up with all this heat so soon and what is going on with our climate? I have two guests joining me now who can provide a few answers about the trends that scientists are seeing in Minnesota and what we need to know about staying safe in the heat. On the line right now, we have Kenny Blumenfeld, the senior climatologist for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources Climatology Office. Hi, Kenny.
Good morning, or almost early afternoon. How are you, Angela?
I am. I'm in air conditioning. That's how I am. And that says a lot right now. We also have on the line, Kenny, Dr. Catherine Katzung. She is the chair of the emergency department at Abbott Northwestern Hospital in Minneapolis. Good morning to you, Dr. Katzung.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you for making time for us. And I want to hear from our listeners, too. We've got some folks on the line already. How are you coping with the heat wave? And what changes have you noticed over the last few years or maybe the last few decades in Minnesota's climate? You can call us at 651-227-6000. Tweet me at Angela Davis, NPR. Kenny, I'll start with you. Today marks the eighth day in a row that we're seeing temperatures in that 90 degree, mid-90s across most of the state. And the forecast is showing tomorrow will be another 90 degree day. That's what Paul Huttner is telling us. And so as a climatologist for the state, I want to know how you and your colleagues are talking about this. Give us a summary of what we are seeing right now.
It's a fair question. I think if you want to know how climatologists are talking about it, it's probably similar to how everyone else is. I mean, we've been surprised by this also. You know, and we follow the forecasts and we can do a little bit of our own forecasting too. So we were kind of watching this thing coming and it looked like a pretty good heat wave, but I don't think that we knew it was going to go a week or longer where the temperatures in the Twin Cities would stay entirely above 70 degrees. That's just absurd for this time of year. And that the high temperatures would not just top 90 degrees. I mean, we've been deep into the 90s. Mm-hmm. So, you know, one of the things, we're public scientists, so our job is to dive into all of that kind of juicy, tasty scientific nuance, and then try and make it understandable to people who aren't climate scientists. And what we've come up with is that, you know, for regular heat waves, if you just include all of summer, well, this is kind of a standard order heat wave if you include mm-hmm. July, because July is when we see most of our heat waves. But when you look at the ones, you know, you really don't have too many that occur before about June 15th. And if you think of those, the ones, you know, when you get 90 degree days in May and in early June, if you think of those as kind of early season heat waves, that's where this one really stands out. We have never recorded anything like this in terms of duration and the intensity of the heat wave for this long of a period, this early in the season. We've had some, you know, we've had some doozies.
Right. But usually in the middle of July, I always think of, you know, as a television reporter, I always had to cover that soccer tournament that they have in Blaine where all those teenagers come here from all over the world and they you know, they suffer from heat exhaustion because we get that heat wave. But this is, again, the extraordinary part of it is that it's coming early. So, Kenny, what's the impact of having an early heat wave? Like, why does it matter?
I mean, you know, it, well, one, it's just, people talk about the weather here and we all cope with the weather, and we kind of famously celebrate our weather here. But I think, you know, when you have something that everyone knows is a little bit out of season, it just, it gets them talking and thinking about it and asking the questions. And of course, with you know, we do have a change in climate here in Minnesota. So when something unusual happens, people start asking questions about, well, how is this related to the change in climate? The impact is really this: people start having to deal with the heat earlier and more persistently than they normally would. And it also exerts an impact on a lot of our natural systems, because, you know, we're seeing July heat in June. So a lot of our crops are at more sensitive and delicate stages in their development. Yeah. A lot of our plants, we're approaching the summer solstice. So the sun is very strong. So we can remove water from our lakes and our rivers and our soils very quickly with this kind of heat. And so it takes kind of a midsummer toll on all of our systems, including people, at an unusually early time. And it makes it seem like summer is farther along than it is. You know, we're still, what, just over a week into June, and we're already, you know, as you said, we're a week or more into this heat wave. So,
and it costs us money too, because we have to spend money to try to stay cool.
We have to spend money to stay cool. And hopefully something your other guest can discuss too is, you know, not everybody can cope with the heat also. Right. I mean, you know, being able to cool down is sort of a luxury that, you know, hopefully everyone can enjoy in some way. But you know, these have been, especially in the cities where the temperatures have just remained very high at night. Mm-hmm. So there's really no ability to cool off naturally. So if you don't have access to those artificial means of cooling, which, as you point out, are expensive, then that's going to stress your body. I mean, you know, we all kind of feel it if we're not in air conditioning. And just imagine not having any access to it whatsoever.
Right. It gets on our nerves. It makes people mean, and it can impact our mental health as well.
So, yeah. You've noticed that too?
Yeah. I'm being very kind this morning. Yeah. I do want to make sure we talk about the safety in the excessive heat. And so, Dr. Katzen, thank you again for your time. You're there at the Abbott Northwestern's Hospital. You're the chair of the emergency department. So describe what is happening in emergency rooms right now. As we've been dealing with this extreme heat now in Minnesota for more than a week, have you all been seeing patients coming in who are suffering from heat exhaustion at your hospital?
So maybe not necessarily straightforward heat exhaustion, but coming in with more heat-related illness. Not that they've been out in the heat. We know it's straightforward, but we see the elderly patients that may not have access to air conditioning, as was mentioned, coming in with dehydration. Sometimes the older you get, you're on medications that can lead to dehydration. So we're seeing more dehydration-related causes, people coming in with vague complaints of, you know, abdominal pain, muscle aches, which are likely related to a low level of dehydration related to the situation. People that have unstable housing, for example, that may be out on the streets at night, coming in with sunburn is a major issue, and definitely some heat-related illness in that patient population as well. So our volumes are busy. My understanding is the EDs across the metro are all pretty busy right now, and I think this is kind of exacerbating some of those volumes too.
Mm-hmm.
At this point,
you know, my understanding has always been that people who are older and children are most vulnerable to the heat. Is that right, Doctor?
Yes. So I'm at Abbott Northwestern, so I don't see as many children here because they go across the street to the Children's Hospital. But I would agree with that. The main things people need to think of is obviously any means of getting out of the heat if you're able to. So public libraries or even kind of public places where you can be accessed to air conditioning. Trying to keep up with your fluids so that you're not dehydrated, and then staying out of the sun as much as you can. So clothing, covering up with like a hat, sunscreen, all important things to consider.
And Dr. Katzing, how long does it take for excessive heat to start affect us? I mean, so a lot of folks are heading to swimming pools and beaches, but then you're in that full on sunshine. I mean, can you give us some guidance into like how much time you want to spend at one time in that sun and heat?
I mean, we all want to be out in the water because it's going to be cooling. it's all dependent on the person. I mean, an elderly person out in the sun would become dehydrated and more heat exhaustion much more quickly than a 20-year-old. So it's if you're able to keep up with your fluids, I'd say reapplying sunscreen, taking breaks where you're out of the sun. I mean, we're Minnesota, the land of 10,000 lakes. Trying to have some time where you're actually out of the sun and off of the water. Oftentimes when you're in the water, the rays are reflecting off of the lake itself and can cause sunburn. So frequent reapplication of sunscreen is very important in those situations. I can't give you a distinct time frame, but taking breaks every hour or a couple hours or so to where you're out of the sun is beneficial. And then just definitely always having that water bottle with you to where you're keeping up with your fluid.
Well, I think there's just value of hearing you say it, because when, as parents, when we say it, you know, we kind of get disregarded. So I just want to, you know, we can't, I think, highlight that enough about staying hydrated and also just giving yourself a break if you're out in the heat. I want to take some phone calls right now as we talk about the extreme heat and how long it's been going on, how early it has come to us. We're talking with a climatologist as well as an emergency room doctor about the heat and taking your phone calls, 651-227-6000 in St. Louis Park. Terry's on the phone. Terry, thank you for waiting, for holding on, and go ahead. What did you want to ask or share?
I feel like I'm in a time machine, and it's 40 years ago. I'm in Houston, Texas, because in Houston, this was kind of normal,
right?
But we knew in January we could laugh because it was 72 and perfect outside. So I'm an aging baby boomer in my mid-60s currently. So 40 years ago, I was in my, 20s. However, I grew up, born and raised in southeastern Wisconsin, which is very similar to the Minnesota climate. Now, in the 50s and 60s, in the small town I grew up in, air conditioning was almost unknown unless we went to the movie house. There just nobody had it in the car, in the house, or anywhere. But yet we still played outside, and we had no sunscreen, and we just somehow we got through summer as kids. But now, the way it is, it's just almost unbearable without having an air-conditioned house and an air-conditioned car, because I thought, were people just tougher 15, 60 years ago? Because, you know, my grandparents would have been as old as I am now and had no air conditioning in their hot farmhouses and such. But is it hotter nowadays than it was in the 50s and 60s? Because I don't remember it being this bad, except when I lived in Houston, where you had to stay inside for days and couldn't even go outside and take a walk.
Well, Terry, these are great questions. That's Terry in St. Louis Park. And I'll start with you, Kenny. You know, what do you hear there? Is it hotter? Were our grandparents tougher? Like, what can you tell him?
You know, some of this is definitely sociological and kind of the sociological, physiological response to climatic conditions. From a straight climate standpoint, I mean, one of the things that we've been saying pretty definitively for recent years is that as Minnesota's climate has been changing, we have not, that is, repeat, we have not been getting hotter. That is, our highest temperatures of the year are not generally higher than they were historically. A lot of our statewide and even local community temperature records were set in the 1930s, and particularly in July of 1936. On the other hand, that was a dry heat, and something that we have been seeing more of. And I think the data really supports it, although you have to be careful with how you use all of these data because, not every station has the same amount. But what the data definitely supports is that we are seeing more heat events where the temperature might not be as high as it was historically. We might not be even over 100 degrees. Temperature might be stuck in the 90s, but the humidity levels are higher. Now, the beginning of this particular heat event would not qualify as that. It started out kind of dry, like a typical spring or old-fashioned heat wave where, you know, it was just hot. It wasn't particularly humid. But we have seen an uptick in, I guess, what I would call humid extreme heat events, where It's not the heat, it's the humidity, and it's the combined effects of the temperature and the moisture in the air that are really driving the human physiological stress. Now, you know, I'm a climatologist and climate scientist, but I happen to work with, I've worked over the years with a lot of people who study some of these issues from, you know, a sociological or medical standpoint. So I can't speak to those specific disciplines. But one of the things that we learned that I think gets to the caller's point is that the heat waves are generally most dangerous at the beginning, assuming that the worst conditions occur at or near the beginning, because there is some small, at least, ability to acclimate. And as summer wears on, an event that, you know, may have really driven us crazy at the beginning of the summer might be a little more tolerable, you know, when you subtract the effects of fatigue, I suppose.
So Kenny, are you saying we are now in 2021 seeing more days where we have high humidity that goes with the warmer weather than maybe we had in the 50s and 60s?
Yeah, I mean, it's a subtle uptick, but we have seen, you know, every couple years in general, we get a day where the temperature is deep into the 90s or maybe even 100, and the dew point temperature is deep into the 70s or maybe even approaching 80 degrees. Mm-hmm. And that's a kind of event where you get the heat index value 115 or so.
Right.
That's the kind of event that we did not used to see historically, even though the air temperature was higher. So those have become more common, but I don't want to give the impression that it's happening every year, or that it's happening all the time, or that that's even really what's at play with this particular event. It's more like that's something that we've observed. And I think it definitely substantiates the caller's observations. And I think that there are kind of multiple pieces at play. One is that, you know, we've always had hot weather, and in terms of air temperature, this isn't really that unusual. What is unusual about this event is its very early start. The high temperatures that we're seeing for this time of year at day and night, and the fact that it just kind of psychologically gets summer off to an earlier start.
And Dr. Katzing, what can you tell us about humidity? And, you know, people joke about it's a dry heat or it's very humid. And how can that impact our bodies if we're struggling with humidity?
It definitely can impact. So when you think about it, our body's mechanism for dealing with heat is sweating. When you have a dry heat, you get evaporation of the sweat. So I think of people being in like Las Vegas where you get a classic dry heat.
Right.
You're sweating off. Here, when it's significantly humid, you have a harder time for that evaporation model because you have the humidity. So you're sweating, but it's not evaporating. We all know we go out in Minnesota. I could be walking around in my yard and I'm just dripping sweat. With the humidity, it's just not as evaporative. And so you're not getting as much of an effectiveness of your cooling mechanism, I would say, in the humid heat versus the dry heat is what our bodies were designed for. And then as we age, we have a little different changes in our body naturally where we're having difficulty with sweating at that point, which can play into it as well.
All right, let's take another phone call as we talk about the extreme heat and how we're coping with it. In St. Cloud, we've got Rose on the phone. Hi, Rose.
Hi.
Hi.
Listen, thank you. I didn't mind waiting because this is a question that has been on my mind for about 4 years.
Oh, my. Let's hear it.
I have observed that the wind events in the state are way beyond what they ever used to be. I don't know if it has to do with the climate changing, or am I just making this up? But I asked my son, I said, have you noticed that the wind has been awfully strong every day? It like never lets up. And he says, yeah. He says, when we're fishing, we can't hardly troll anymore because the wind is always so strong. So
all right.
Am I making this up? Is it just my imagination?
Let's ask Rose. Let's ask Kenny. Kenny Blumenfeld there, senior climatologist, excuse me, for the DNR. Rose wants to know what's up with the wind.
Yeah, Rose, that's a really good observation. We don't have a lot of data, but I can tell you that this has been an especially gusty. Our spring was very gusty. We had a lot of gusty days over the winter also. And we seem to be, over the last few years, having, even if the average wind is down, because we've had a lot of days where the wind doesn't blow at all, it does seem that the number of days with, you know, high gusts above, say, 40 miles an hour, or even 30 miles an hour, which I think you'll notice if you're outside, those do seem to be up. Now, I do a lot of speaking around the state with, you know, talking about how the climate is or is not changing in Minnesota. And unfortunately, wind is something we don't have great data sets for, but we hear from foresters, people who work outside a lot and who work with, you know, species that respond directly to the wind. We hear from foresters and a lot of outdoor recreationists that it appears to be windier. So there's some, at least, I would say, a lot of anecdotal support for Rose's observation and speculation. And I think it's just a matter of time before we have some data that at least supports, you know, more gusty winds, even if the average daily wind speed isn't necessarily going up. So it's a really good question and observation. The best I can do is say that, you know, we've observed similar things, especially in the last couple of years, but we don't have data to support it as, you know, a bona fide trend at this point.
Dr. Katzing, I have a question about heat stroke. We've talked a little bit about heat exhaustion, but what is heat stroke? What does it look like? What are the signs and symptoms of that?
So heat stroke is a heat-related illness is all on a spectrum, and heat stroke I like to think of as the worst. So once your body temperature gets significantly elevated, we're talking like 103, 104 above, you then impair your ability to sweat. So patients with heat stroke actually stop sweating. So your body's natural cooling mechanism, as I explained, is the sweating. They will be kind of dry mouth, you know, dehydrated, obviously. They can have temperatures up to like 107. No sweat, which is not a good sign in these conditions. And they'll become altered. So confused is the common thing we'll see. So confused, headaches, muscle aches. You can get some with the dehydration, some muscle breakdown that can occur. But definitely that would be the worst end of the spectrum. And so whereas the milder stuff we're seeing is more kind of more vague complaints, a little dehydration. Their physical temperature, when we take their temperature coming into the ER, is not really above normal, but they're suffering the effects of the heat.
Okay. Let's take another phone call as we talk about the extreme heat we're living through here in Minnesota. In Edina, Tim is on the phone. And Tim, what did you want to share or ask?
Hi, Angela. Well, maybe this is for Ken, the climatologist, but you know, every generation thinks that we have the best or the worst of Minnesota weather, I think. But I was wondering how this heat wave that we're having now, and certainly the climate's getting hotter, but compares back to the early 30s and the Dust Bowl years in Minnesota. I mean, often you see that the highest daily temperatures in the summer in Minnesota are from 1933, 34, 35, when you see it on the TV news and stuff. So are we actually hotter right now in terms of this wave than we've ever been, even back into the 30s?
That's a really good question. Yeah, we touched on this a little bit ago, but the answer is no. The temperatures are not higher than those historical records. You're right. In 1934, 1931, 1936, I mean, the 30s were just incredibly hot. They were very, very dry. And so, ironically, they were also very cold in the wintertime. So a lot of our statewide and regional local record highs and lows were set in the 1930s because it was so dry. So from a temperature standpoint, no. This heat wave is really mostly remarkable for the time of the season that it's occurring. And it has unseated some of the early season heat waves from, you know, June and May and June of 1934, and some of the earlier historic heat waves that had kind of defined the gold standard of early summer heat-related misery, it has unseated those. So as an early season heat wave, this is kind of the longest and most severe that we've had in the Twin Cities and in areas like Brainerd and other parts of Minnesota. But in terms of raw temperature, no, it does not compare with some of those all-time high temperature records that were set in the 1930s.
And Kenny, does this heat wave give us an indication of what we could see for the rest of the summer, or is there no correlation at all?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Angela. So without going into too much detail, what we see is early season heat events and heat waves do tend to be related to at least slightly higher than normal counts of hot days for the rest of the summer. But it's not what you would think of as a smoking gun. So it, you know, by no means is it every single time we have a lot of heat in May or June, it means that the whole summer is going to be hot. But it does tend to be, 60-70% of the time it's followed by a summer that's at least warmer than average and has more hot days than average.
And in terms of trends, are we seeing a trend where our summers are longer here in Minnesota?
Yeah, not necessarily. I mean, one of the things that makes this a little challenging from communicating about climate and climate change is that our climate has not yet, in any case, featured a lot more hot days or a lengthening of summer. I mean, we have seen some of these heat waves getting pushed, earlier and later in the season, but it's not happening every year at all. And we've actually had some really late winters and some really kind of early beginning winters. And sometimes the two different conditions have mixed with each other so that, you know, you have summer-like conditions lasting deep into fall and then also winter conditions starting kind of early in fall. The way that our summer has changed for the most part is that overnight lows have been increasing. That's kind of the most common change that we've seen. And it's not necessarily those warmest nights. It's actually the coolest nights have been getting a bit warmer. So this one is... You know, it might be part of a trend that is beginning to emerge with longer summers, but we don't have strong evidence of that. It does not, I would not say at this point, it's representative of the types of changes that have become more common in Minnesota. This right now, it's standing out and it's going to make us consider, you know, what it has to do with climate change and what climate change has to do with it going forward.
And Dr. Katzing, there in the emergency department at Abbott Northwestern Hospital, I really want to make sure we talk about more people who do not have air conditioning. How should they be managing this? And what advice would you have for folks who just don't have access to AC in their homes? Or how can they just try to stay as cool as possible through the today and the days to come this summer?
Yeah, so I think obviously getting into an air-conditioned environment, if they're able to, so, you know, if you're out, go to a public library, public spaces that have air conditioning. I think of it, my grandparents also grew up in a home without air conditioning, and I remember we would shut the drapes during the day to minimize direct heat into the house. Windows were opened at night to allow the cooler air to come in to try and get some of that differential. With the changes in the temperature during the day, having cool drinks, cool water. Like I said, the evaporative process is how our body regulates our heat. So cool washcloths, so wet washcloth, cold water, applying that, misting of your body. I know people do that. You have misters in places like Las Vegas area. Mm-hmm. Just kind of pull that one out. Mm-hmm. Some sort of misting to allow the evaporation to occur. And obviously the most important is if you're feeling kind of heat-related illness, so muscle aches, feel dry, maybe a little bit of confusion, especially in those older adults, and dehydration. You're here 24/7, so nobody is going to fault you for coming in and getting checked out.
I appreciate you saying that. Yeah, we've got to check on each other, make sure we get through this together safely. Our guest this hour, I want to thank you again. We've been talking to Dr. Katzen, Catherine Katzen. They are the chair at the emergency department at Abbott Northwestern Hospital in Minneapolis, as well as Kenny Blumenfeld, a senior climatologist for the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources. Thank you both, Dr. Katzing and Kenny, for sharing your expertise with us today.
Okay, thank you.
This conversation was produced by NPR's Samantha Matsumoto and Susan Davis. Hi, I'm Angela Davis, and you just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. To add your voice to the conversation, you can call in at 651-227-6000 or tweet me at Angela Davis NPR. If you missed us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. Thanks for listening.